Blog Talk Radio.
This is All About Wine, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009, featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post
I love
your that. Questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on.
Yeah.
Here's Ross Rock.
There he is. Bus people are you know, they're not around here tonight. It's raining here now, which, by the way, or BTW, however you want to say it, if all of a sudden you hear a big clap of thunder and I'm not here anymore, it's because of the thunder and rain we're having. So
you're having it now, huh?
Yeah, we're getting it now. Yeah, it's been actually for the last 20 minutes or so, it's been raining, thunder, and all that. So, but you know, it just may move out and not bother us, which I hope happens. But if it does,
we have a tropical storm, Elsa.
Former
queen Elsa is now a tropical storm Elsa. And so,
Formal cyclone. They were saying we got cyclone activity, and I'm going, cyclone. That's Pacific. We call ours hurricanes, and then.
Yeah,
you know.
Tropical cyclone. I was like, when did this come in? They're coming up with new names now.
I know.
This large twisty thing out in the Atlantic is heading this way.
It is, and the cone of uncertainty is all of the state of Florida. So,
wow.
Yeah, last I saw, anyway, the cone of uncertainty. Although the local weather girl used to work in Jacksonville, and now she's down here with us. We replaced another girl. And she said that with the wind shear up in the upper atmosphere and with the land masses that it's got to go through and all this other stuff, she said it'll probably destroy it before it gets anywhere near Florida. So, hope so. She says the early season to get anything that's going to be anything. So, I don't know.
She's the one on... Is she the one on Channel 8 that I'm thinking of?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Blonde hair. I keep thinking the way she smiles and the way she poses sometimes, she must have been like in a pageant because she has that look. I don't know what. No?
Yeah.
Really?
Lee. Okay. You're not thinking of Lee.
No, I know. No, I know.
You know,
Lee's.
She's a morning girl. Rebecca. Is her name, and she was up there. Yeah, she has that pageant type posing
they did a commercialized. Nobody else is standing like her, and the way she's facing the camera, and she's got her arm, you know, back and everything. I'm thinking she's done something like pageantry or, you know, Miss Florida or something. I don't know what it is, but I'm thinking something's up there.
Yeah, I've noticed that too.
Hey, you know,
she gets that model look, you know.
Nothing about her weather forecasting. I'm just saying, you know.
I noticed that too. It's something on that line. But she's saying that it should destroy the cyclone, tropical storm, hurricane, whatever it is, over the land masses and with the air above and all that before it gets here. We'll get some rains, but that should be about it. But we get rains now, so hey, what the heck.
Every day, it's almost 2 days. I think, and it's been going nonstop.
Yeah, it pretty much has. Played golf yesterday, and we got rained on the last five holes, and which is really sad because the first time we played the course, we played, and it would have been a lot more fun if we hadn't gotten rained on. But hey, we still had fun. It was a great course, World Woods up in Hernando County, really, really nice course. So,
Is that a different one from where you get injured all the time, or is this a different one?
Yeah, yeah. This one's at the end of the Suncoast, and so we took the Suncoast up there, and three of us went up yesterday and played it. We had coupons, and so we went up and played it and had a good time. And the coupons also gave us a lunch, so that was always good, too. World Woods, really, really, they have two courses. One of them was closed down, and I had one open, but really a nice day, nice course. Good. So, this is all about wine, people. This, you haven't tuned in to, to another discussion.
I was going to say, it's on the ticker, it's like live, it's all about wine. I go, really?
Really? Yeah.
So anyway, back to golf.
back to golf. just let everyone know that it's not the wrong show.
Do they serve wine at golf courses, or do they not have alcohol beverages?
They do. Oh yeah, well, beer. I mean, it's usually beer's the thing at golf courses.
I thought wine would be the big draw.
Beer. It's beer. Golf courses, it's beer. I mean, it just you drive by the baskets that they have at each of the tees, so you can throw garbage away. And at the beginning, five or six baskets are pretty much empty, except for maybe golf ball boxes and stuff. And then you start getting on the sixth to the ninth, and they're starting to become full of beer cans and beer bottles. And then the rest of the course are just, that's all you see in his beer cans and beer bottles.
You see golfers laying around.
Yeah. Some of them, a six pack on the front nine and a six pack on the back nine. Beer is a big thing in golf, and some wine. I mean, you can get wine in the clubhouse and all that. A friend of mine, in fact, I used to work with at the winery. He and I played golf a few times, and he would always bring a bottle of wine and glasses. And after like three or four holes, he would pull out the wine and open it up, and we'd stop and we'd have a glass of wine. And then a couple of three more holes, more wine. And by the time we got to the 15th hole, we'd be finishing up the bottle of wine. And he would always bring wine with us. So,
Now the beer trash you're finding, is it mostly cans or is it bottles?
Both.
Does that mean?
Both.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's both.
I was just wondering.
When I was rangering, I would, clean out the cans all I wanted as a golf ranger, and I would find both. Yeah, I mean, it just, people come in the clubhouse and they say, take, beer with you. Yeah, give me six bottles or give me six cans or whatever. And they'd ask for different. Some people like cans, some like bottles, but it's both. It makes no difference.
I thought maybe it was like pool rules, you couldn't take glass out on the course or something. And what are you going to drink wine in if it was a glass bottle or something? So I wasn't sure if there was a rule for that.
They're bringing beer in a bottle.
Okay.
Some people like the bottles and some people like cans and so on. And the cup holders on the golf carts are just the right size to hold the cans or the bottles. So it makes no difference on that.
Yep.
It's usually beer more so than wine on golf courses.
We got back on the topic of wine.
Transitioned over to wine.
You want to chat with us? You can do so on I have no idea if YouTube has a chat feature on it, but you can definitely on Facebook or on Blog Talk Radio. Just go to our show page on Blog Talk Radio and hit on that chat button thing down there, and you can chat as well. And just type something, type a topic, whatever, question for Ron, and there we go. It's almost 8 o'clock. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for listening to our discussion on the weather and golf. See you next week. Oh, before you go, I'm going to be on a different show next week besides All About Wine. Well, Mike and I were talking about this. Yeah, thank you. This is, I say it, next week. I guess it's going to be, well, before I start bouncing around all this, I was interviewed. I was on an interview with Maria Liberati. That's MARIALIBERATI, Maria Liberati. She is like, oh my gosh, a Gourmand World Award winning author, blogger of the basic art of Italian cooking. And she has a book series, and she has a blog, and she has a Maria Liberati Show podcast, which is the one I'm going to be on. She's also a contributor to many national and international publications, multimedia journalist, producer, and content creator, author of 10 award-winning culinary travel books, also winner of the Culinary Travel Blog of the Year by the New York Travel Writers Society, and the Culinary Content Innovators Award by Corporate Livewire. Wow. I was on her show. I'm going to get her on mine, too. She said, yeah, we'll get together and I'll be a guest on your show. So sometime in July, we will have her as a guest on All About Wine. But we discussed, it wasn't a very long discussion, actually. I guess it was like, you know, 20 minutes or so. July is Wine and Cheese Month, she informed me, which I had no idea. But that's why she wanted me on the show. We talked about wine and cheese and, you know, some of my favorites and different things like that. And so that's what the interview was. You can go to, well, her homepage is, and I'm bringing it up here. If it loads, yeah, there we go. MariaLiberati.com. Which is pretty simple and easy. And then you can click on blog, which is part of the, on the homepage there, part of the stuff across the top. You can click on blog. You go to the blog. It excuse me. And it has different dates and different blogs that have, she's done and all that. And so we interviewed, and then she's going to, I don't know, edit or whatever, and then put it up on, or put it together with others or whatever she does. I don't know. And have it on the blog that way. So you can check me out, check the interview out. And hopefully we're going to get Maria sometime in July here to join us, and we'll have her on the show. So come Wednesday, I'll be on hers, and it'll be up there. So you don't have to watch it Wednesday. It'll be added to her blogs, but blogs or podcasts? Hang on for 1 second. I think it might be podcasts instead of blogs. I think I told you wrong. I did tell you wrong. It's going to be on a podcast. There you go. She's got all sorts of different podcasts you can go to there. Wow. There you go. Spotify, Radio Public, Pocket Cast, Overcast, Apple Podcast, Google Podcasts, Castbox, Breaker, and Anchor. Available on 9 platforms. Oh my gosh, Mike. Here are all those. There's different ones you can check out there. So,
yeah.
I don't know what it takes to hook up with all those, but she's on all those. If you go to her page, and click podcast, you see all those different ones there. But I don't know which one I'm going to be on. I say blog, then I say podcast, and I might even be on video because she actually recorded me through Zoom, I believe it was. And so I might even be on the video aspect of it. Who knows? Just check out her website, and you'll find me somewhere in there after Wednesday. She said that'll be about the time she's going to download it. So there you go, Maria.
Well, if you did video on her show, then you know you have to do video on this show.
Yeah. So
keep that in
mind. I'll keep that in mind.
these little static pictures here might be getting old to some people looking at the same ones, and like they need to have real video on there. And there you go. So
yeah, there you go. But then we were talking before the show about editing, and then you would have to start editing. And
no.
Now, see? So that ended that right away there. Yeah.
Editing video?
Oh. That'd be a little bit too much work. Yeah. So there you go. That's coming up this next week, Maria Liberati. And again, I'm going to get her as a guest sometime this month. So we got, what, 4 more weeks in this month to get her on. Is that right? Yeah. So that's it. So some things to talk about here today that I've found that I want to bring up to you and talk about and educate you on. Start with is, this is Dateline. This is news that I just got today. Oh, I'm sorry, yesterday. Washington State has a new viticultural area. Their 19th AVA in Washington State. 19 in Washington State alone. This is Goose Gap. It's the newest one in Washington State. And I think the newest AVA. It officially is starting today, July 1st. It is a new AVA American Viticulture Area in Washington. It has a total of 8,129 acres, all of it within Yakima Valley, within the Yakima Valley AVA also, and part of it in the larger Columbia Valley AVA. So it's all... wait a minute. Let me read this properly here. Let's see. Wholly located within the Yakima Valley AVA and the larger Columbia Valley AVA. Okay, so there it is. Currently, 1,800 acres of wine grapes split between two commercial vineyards. 16 varieties are planted, and the fruit is sold to more than 20 wineries around the state. It takes its name from the saddle of land known as Goose Gap, which was named because it was a flyway for geese between two rivers. So, new AVA in Washington State. It's a little more technical. The orientation of Goose Mountain is east to west, whereas almost all nearby hills are northwest to southwest. So, for this reason, vineyards within the AVA are dominantly planted on north and northwest slopes. And the soil of the Goose Gap AVA is almost two-thirds Warden series, which is a considerably higher percentage compared to surrounding areas. Let's see. These soils are wind-blown loess over layered or stratified silts and fine sands from the ancient Missoula floods, and have rooting depths of 6 feet or more with no root restrictive layers. Which is a good thing. Yeah, you know, a lot of areas, you know, have clay or something down like 3 feet or 2 feet. This one's 6 feet or more, good soil. So that's a good thing. The Missoula floods, that's ancient Missoula floods. That's a pretty cool thing because, you know, check that out. That's an interesting thing. I think YouTube has a little video on that. And it covers the western part of the United States. It was an enormous lake, and it was blocked by mountains, and the mountains, I don't know, earthquake or something, caused it to flood out to the ocean and all that. So, yeah, check it out. It's, like I say, it's interesting. So, Goose Gap in Washington, a new AVA. Arizona. Excuse me. Arizona. We've talked about Arizona. We've talked about Arizona a lot in the past. Arizona's growing wine scene is really exploding right now. We never did talk to wineries directly in Arizona back at the time when we started to talk about states. Arizona was one of the first, and I just called them up and talked to wineries there, and we didn't have anyone on the show. So we are going to do that again in the future. But Arizona is known for its natural parks and scenery and Grand Canyon, obviously, and the temperatures can hit 100 degrees whenever you see any temperatures around the country. They're always talking about Phoenix having 10 days in a row of 110 degrees or higher and stuff like that. I mean, it's like, ooh. But Arizona is a big wine state. Mendoza in Argentina is a good example of Arizona type wines. We don't have any large bodies of water moderating the climate, but they do have elevation. Arizona has the second highest temperature shift in the world of grape growing, and that's after Argentina. So, excuse me. So it's a little bit different. Most of the state's growing region is located between 3,200 and 5,500 feet above sea level. So it creates for a different type of wine growing region. Wine there started back in the 1700s, if not earlier, from Spanish growers, and it has exploded since then. There are some areas that are more popular than others. There's three major AVAs, the Sonoita, and I was wondering if I'm ever pronouncing that right, S-O-N-O-I-T-A, Sonoita. Sonita, well, the Sonita Elgin is the first AVA in the state, and that's in the southeast part of the state, south of Tucson. Wilcox is in the southern part of the state, and the Verde Valley north of Phoenix will probably become the third AVA shortly. I believe it's under review now by TTB, so it shouldn't be too much longer. So, southern part of the state, though, that's, like I say, south of Phoenix, not Phoenix, south of Tucson, the Sonoita place, it's the most versatile. It's exposed to hailstorms, high winds, early frost, monsoonal-type rains, extreme heats, but it is a great place to grow grapes. Volcanic influence in Wilcox, and clays and loamy soils and all that. So it's a very popular place to grow grapes. In fact, a friend of mine who has a winery down there, in fact, he just changed his name. It used to be Keith, I can't think of another name. Keith, he changed his name. He has a different name now, but he's down in that area there. And there's a lot of wineries in there. They grow Malvasia, Vignier, Petit Mansing, Vermentino, Grenache, Sangiovese, Syrah. Quite a variety of different grapes are grown in that part of it, as well as up in the northern part. When you start getting in the northern part of Arizona, west of Phoenix, over in the, I just had it here and I lost it. What is that area? I know it and I see it all the time. And I can't think of it right now. But west of Phoenix, and that is the area that is well noted for grape growing in Arizona. So Arizona, a big state. We'll have to visit that some more in the future here. It's a great state for grapes. They have a rule there. They don't ship out wine in the summer because it's too hot. They don't want the wine to be sitting in trucks or in warehouses or anywhere in the summer when it's so hot. They don't want the wine to be cooked. So I saw that in Arizona, and I thought, great, we're going to have to talk a little bit about Arizona. There is a new book out, The Comprehensive Guide to South American Wines. And the reason I want to talk about this is because we talked about Bolivia. We had a guest on, what was it, 3 weeks ago, who talked to us about Bolivia and Bolivian wines. Well, there's a book out. English writer Amanda Barnes has published one of the most comprehensive guides to South American wines to date. The South American Wine Guide, which makes sense, doesn't it? Talking about Argentina, Chile, Uruguay, Brazil, Bolivia, and Peru. And it's a 528-page book, and she has researched it for over 10 years, and she's lived down there. It's detailed maps, photography, and collaboration with over 60 regional specialists, 70 wine regions, and maps of 40 different wine regions besides the 70 she talks about. And it's all in English, so it's not Spanish and it's not interpreted Spanish. 500-year history of wine out of South America, and what it's taken to get to the point they are now. The guy talks about winemaker and winery profiles, wine region travel guides, curated list of each region's best wines, 2,500 tasted samples she did while compiling the book. So she said quite a bit of research, and it is all it's available in United Kingdom, U.S., and Europe, priced at £35. I have no idea what the price would be in English, but £35. And it's also available on Kindle for £21. So if you don't want the book itself, you can always get it on Kindle. Barnes herself was born in England. She is an award-winning wine writer and has been based in South America since 2009. She's also been a correspondent for Decanter Magazine, which is one of the big ones out of England. And she is currently studying to become a master of wine. No, good for her. So, sounds like a great book. £35. I don't know. The pound, I think, is more than the dollar. So, you're probably looking at about $25, $27. I'm sure Amazon.
The other way around. Sorry.
Oh, the other way around?
If it's a... Yeah, pound sterling, 35 pounds is $48.15.
Oh, I'm in the wrong direction then. Okay.
Yeah. If it's the same one, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. It just says 35 pounds here. So I'm sure it's available on Amazon. So you might be able to find it on Amazon. But looks like a good book. If you're interested in South American wines or anything out of South America, again, Argentina, Chile, Uruguay, Brazil, Bolivia, and Peru, well, except for some of the little small countries up in the northern part, but that pretty much covers the wine-growing regions of South America. So, good book. Check it out if you're interested in South American wines. I think that would probably be your most comprehensive guide you're going to find for South American wines. Heat wave in Oregon. Well, I say that as if that's something new. Actually, it's a heat wave throughout the West, going from, the mountains of the Rockies all the way over to the Pacific Ocean, but particularly the Pacific Northwest. What's so sad about it is Oregon's Willamette Valley is experiencing the hottest days ever recorded there just this last Monday, with the temperature of hitting 116 degrees in Salem. 116 degrees, that's 47 degrees Celsius if you're into that. Baking that part. British Columbia hit 113 on Sunday. Portland, Oregon, 112. And Seattle has reached an all-time high of 104. A little frosty compared to the others. Now, these temperatures hit California in the San Joaquin Valley, but they don't hit there. And since Oregon is noted for its Pinot Noir, we're going to get to find out what happens when you cook Pinot Noir grapes on the vine. Now, what it does is evaporates the moisture from the fruit, because Pinot Noir is so thin skin. This is what they're always saying. The problem with growing Pinot Noir is that the skin is so thin That's why the Pinot Noir doesn't give you a whole real dark, deep color in the wine, because the color comes from the skin, and it's not a real thick skin, so you don't get a chance to get real dark, deep colors because of it. Well, being thin skin too, it tends to cause problems when the heat. And the heat breaks down the acidity a lot. It increases the sugar, which can end up going directly to the fruit, which then is going to raise the alcohol levels, but it's going to not give you the acid to balance it out. All sorts of problems with the heat. So what will happen is the evaporation of the moisture out of the grape will cause shriveling, and it'll sunburn the grape. And it basically could just destroy a crop without much effort at all. It could just destroy a crop. But the grapes have not been through Verizon. Now, Verizon, if you remember, is when the grapes start changing colors and they go from the green, they start becoming whatever color they're going to be. Instead of the hard green grapes, they start becoming purple and the reds and different colors. So now the berries are still tiny, green, and hard. So it's not affecting them greatly yet. And they are increasing the cover over it. I mean, the crop, they're not going into the vineyards and thinning it out so that the berries can get the sun and stuff. So letting the leaves shelter the grapes. So that's something that's good. It's early in the season. Gregory Jones, who we've interviewed way in the past, if you want a great interview, go back and check that out in the archives. But he is a research climatologist at Linfield University in McMinnville, which is located in the Willamette Valley. I loved the interview with him. Very interesting man. We've had him on before, and I've talked to him before about different things. He is the wines industry's go-to expert on climate and global warming. And he's most of his career has been checking out how the climate has affected grapevines. And at Willamette Valley, it was 110 degrees. Jones says the biggest challenge with a heat wave like this is that the past couple of days and tomorrow are likely to be 25 to 30 degrees above average. 25 to 30 degrees. Amazing. Well, again, to continue the quote, what makes the Pacific Northwest so suitable for cool climate grapes is that we don't usually see things like this. The North Willamette Valley is mostly unirrigated. Without irrigation, there isn't much you can do. This was a time when most of the canopies are at their full flush of growth. There's probably enough growth to give shade and keep the berries a little cooler. But there's some concern that it could cause some issues with yield. And that is the issue. The grapevines are pretty hardy. So they're not going to kill. It's the grapes themselves that is the thing. Grapevines have an ability to dig down into the ground and find root, find moisture. And so they will, and they do. And when they find the moisture, they're able to keep themselves cool, watered. But the problem is that once those grapes are coming out, the sun's going to start hitting them, and there's not a whole heck of a lot the grapevines can do to keep them from drying out. They can put their effort into it, but still it could cause problems with the grapevines. Jones says, and I quote again, these heat domes getting as big as this one is, those are the sorts of things we expect in a warming climate. The impact of, end quote on that, the impact of climate change is apparent not in the fact that there is a heat wave, because they always have heat waves, but it's the scale of the heat wave that is really affecting everything more than what it normally does. I just passed his credentials here. Where did I see that? up here. Oh, I don't know. A guy by the name of Bruneau, who is up in that area there, who is part of the Oregon Wine Board, said there's always something. Think about the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. The first was the pandemic. The second was that it rained last year so much that it reduced our yields more than ever in the Willamette Valley, 38% on average reduction. The third was smoke from last year, and this is the fourth. We hope this is the last horseman. So that's just in Willamette Valley that I was telling you about. The western part of the United States is going through a heat wave, and it's affecting all the way back. Good thing about it is it's still early in the season. Basically, I mean, the grapes haven't hit Verizon yet, so that is the best thing about it. It's still early in the season. Okay. Texas just passed a new law, which could be groundwork for other states to follow. Who knows? It might not. But they're celebrating a significant milestone, they say. The Governor Abbott of Texas signed into law House Bill 1957, which provides for new labeling regulations in Texas. It's going to help the consumer realize what's going on. Now, Texas currently follows the federal standards where a wine can be labeled as Texas as long as 75% of the grapes used in the bottle come from somewhere within the state. And then the remaining 25% can come from outside the state, anywhere. Excuse me, let me guess. Drink of water here. The new law, which goes into effect September the 1st, 2 months from today, requires any label that includes a county, an American Viticulture Area, or AVA, or vineyard designation will now be following more stringent requirements. This is the breakdown that the law is going to be doing here. County designations. 75% of the grapes must come from within that county. The remaining 25% may come from anywhere within Texas. So if you say a county, then it's a Texas wine, and 75% come from there. American Viticulture, or an AVA, 85% of the grapes must come within that AVA. The remaining 15% anywhere within Texas. Again, they're keeping it within the state. And 75% is the national, and now Texas is making it 85% within the state. Only other state that has higher than 75 is Oregon. At last I heard, Oregon has a higher percentage. I think they're 85 also. But the country, 75 is what's required. Vineyard designation. Now, this is really tight. 95% of the grapes must come from that vineyard. The remaining 5% may come from anywhere within Texas. And if a wine is labeled as Texas only, it is still able to follow the federal standard of 75% of the grapes from within Texas, and an additional 25% can come from another state. So that's the only one that still follows the federal standards. So, you know, it's going to be quite interesting. Get yourself a Texas wine, check out the label, see if it says county designation, AVA, or vineyard designation, because that is Texas all the way. And Texas has always had problems of getting grapes. They have always, with the number of wineries there, they have always had problems getting grapes for their wines. And with these new regulations, we may see less county designation on the label, less AVA designation, and definitely less vineyard designation, unless the winery has some big vineyards of their own and they're not going to be selling it to anyone else. So that should be an interesting move there. It says the consumer will know that at least all of the grapes are from Texas. Previously, we didn't know that. And now, says Carl Money, who is a past president of the Texas Wine Growers Association. And he also has a winery of his own. Says that this is just a great thing. So we'll see. And, you know, if this works and if this continues on and then they can do this and it creates buzz and more wine being sold within Texas and even outside. And I think we're going to start seeing other winery, other states, rather, do this also. Is alcohol rising in wines? You've heard this statement before. Alcohol is going up in wines. They're making higher alcohol wines. I don't think it's happening personally. I think we're pretty much about the same. But I saw this article here, and it was interesting. It said that they got new figures now that show a period from Bordeaux, Tuscany, Piedmont, and California. And it says they've all had higher alcohol levels on average in the last decade than they did in the 1990s. Okay. For example, Bordeaux averaged in 1990 to 1999, average alcohol was like 12.75. But then from 2000 to 2009, it jumped up to almost 13.5%. And then from 2010 to 2019, it jumped up to like 13.8%, almost 14%. So it has jumped up. Same thing with Burgundy. It was lower in 1990s, but then it jumped up in 2000-2009, but then it dropped just a little bit in this last decade. California Red. Now, this is the change here. California Red averaged like 13.7% alcohol 1990-1999. Then in 2000-2009, that jumped up to like 14.6% alcohol. But then it dropped this last decade down to about 14.5. So that has dropped. Piedmont, it jumped up. It's always been high alcohol. It's close to 14 1990s. But then it jumped up to like 14.25 in 2000. It stayed there. It hasn't varied much. And Tuscany, the same thing. 13.75, it jumped up to over 14. And a little bit higher in the last decade. So, yeah, it is. Alcohol is going up, but it's not recently. The big jump was in the early part of the 2000s. And the sugar levels is the reason. The substantial sugar levels have jumped up. And so what do you do with sugar levels if you don't turn it to alcohol? I mean, really, think about it. There's nothing else you can do with it. The alcohol level usually stays around 14.5, and it doesn't go. Fortified wines are 15.5 to 22%. These are fortified. And this is the levels that you get with ports and sherries and stuff. And also, these are the levels that once it gets to 15.5, the government taxes you at a higher level. And this is something I've always said. You're not going to see wine jumping up to 15, 16, 17% unless the winery is willing to absorb the extra tax or you're going to be paying for it. And most of the time, you're going to be paying for it. So when you pick up wine and say, oh, I like a wine that's really high in alcohol, well, consider you're paying for that really high in alcohol because the taxes are higher. And most state taxes are higher on it, too. I know the federal is, Florida is, and I'm sure most every state tax around the country has got higher taxes on. Excuse me. We've got higher taxes on wine once it hits the, well, usually 15.5, 16, 17%, depending on your state. Also, you got to consider, too, there's a trend towards low and non-alcohol wines in recent years, which if you're doing an average, that's going to change your average there because of this new trend. But this article here didn't do an average. They just this actually looked at the alcohol levels in those regions. So, yes, alcohol levels have went up. If you've been drinking for a number of years, you will see the difference. But if you are a new drinker, it's just about the same. It hasn't changed too much. Croatia. That part of the world is the what the center, the start of wine, the whatever we want to call that's where wine started in the world. Well, Croatia is having their first national Croatian Wine Day. In the United States, it marks the 30th anniversary of independence from Croatia. And that date should be, and let me see where I can find it here. I think we might have missed it. Wait a minute, the 29th? 2 days ago. Why is this 2 days ago? What is the date of this? No, this is the date of the article, the 29th. Croatian Wine Day certification. Some 20 years ago, they did the recognition of Croatian wines in the U.S. And fast forward to today, they are proclaiming the first ever National Croatian Wine Day to mark Croatia's proclamation of independence, which I guess was yesterday, our day before yesterday, the 29th. So it was the day before yesterday. So if you are of Croatian descent, I'm sorry to tell you late, but you missed it. But it's a winemaker and some other people have gotten together and designated it, and a country has picked it up. They give the names. There's, you know, a sommelier and wine educator by the name of Anna Ritoza, and she's got a boutique winery in Perec, Istria. And then there's other people also that have gotten behind it, but she is the one who originally proclaimed the 29th of June as National Croatian Wine Day in the U.S. Okay. I don't know if it's National Croatian Wine Day anywhere else, but she proclaimed it in the U.S. So there you go for that. And our old nemesis, the spotted lanternfly. Pennsylvania is making a big to try to eradicate that in Pennsylvania. They have 26,000 businesses that have stepped up to check the spotted lanternfly. You can get a permit, and if you are passing through Pennsylvania or you're doing business, you get your permit. And the permit is free. Just go down and say, I want a spotted lanternfly permit. And you can run traps for it or whatever. If you violate and don't get a permit, you're subject to fines of up to $300 per violation, plus your court costs. And the permit's free. So if you're living in Pennsylvania and you're doing a business, go get your free permit. Don't, you know, it's not worth not doing it. It's a free permit. Citing, if you cite it anywhere, there is a toll-free number. Call, it is 1-888-4-BAD-FLY. And that is the actual number, BADFLY, 4-BAD-FLY. And this will help them establish where it is and how it's moving and what's going on with it. There are a Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture has found a dog that can sniff out the spotted lanternfly. The dog's name is Lucky. It's a German Shepherd. It was trained as a puppy to work and detect the spotted lanternfly eggs, and it has been able to spot or smell the spotted lanternfly within an area, a tree or something like that. First dog in the nation trained to detect the spotted lanternfly, which is really cool. And let's hope that they train more because it is all over. She is a German Shepherd, and it is a female. Not just saying she. So Pennsylvania is getting proactive. They are doing what they can to get this spotted lanternfly controlled. If you find it in one area, they want to know where it is and how many you're catching and what's going on with it. And they're tracing it around the state. They said that in 2019, the economic impact from the spotted lanternfly that has left uncontrolled could cost Pennsylvania up to $324 million annually and as many as 2,800 jobs. So it's not just something you go, it'll go away. No, it won't. Another thing with the spotted lanternfly, I don't know if I really covered it. When it feeds, it excretes a sugary substance called honeydew, and a lot of insects do. But this one, honeydew encourages the growth of black sooty mold, which causes damage to plants and attracts stinging insects. The sticky substance is known to coat decks and outdoor furniture, play equipment, and vehicles. So it has that going for it, too. Not only does it destroy crops and everything else, Pennsylvania estimates that the agriculture industry can be affected with the spotted lanternfly by as much as $132.5 billion. Wow. So they are doing what they can, getting everyone involved, all businesses. Again, more than 26,000 businesses already have their permits, and they're hoping that people will continuously do so and become active with that. So, it's needs to be done. That's where the center started. And in 2014, the first spotted lanternfly was spotted in Pennsylvania. And since then, it has spread across the country. Okay. I have talked in the past, back when they first unregulated and legalized marijuana, how it would affect grapevines and wine and all that. And I talked about it off and on. Article here says that the problem that they're running across right now, more than anything, is the unregulated marijuana growing, not so much the legal cannabis, but the unregulated cannabis. And it's starting to pop up in different areas. The cannabis growers can now legally say grown in Napa County on their packaging, but not Napa Valley. And so it's starting to make an impact. Cannabis growers are finding that grape land is as good, or vineyards land is probably one of the best to grow cannabis. And because of it, cannabis value in areas like Sonoma County, cannabis values can reach a per acre price of $5.5 million to $6 million each year. Whereas in Sonoma County, grapes were valued at $11,000 per acre in 2019. So per acre for cannabis, $5.5 million to $6 million a year, whereas grapes, 11,000 per acre. So, you know, you can see why cannabis is starting to make an impact cost roughly $25,000 an acre to develop a vineyard. But setting up cannabis tends to be more expensive up front, but in the long run, you can make a lot more money off of it. So it's becoming an issue. The article just goes on and quotes people about how it's affecting it back and forth and everything else. I won't go through the whole article, but you get the point. It's just premium wines like Napa can excel in cannabis. Probably. If Napa grows the best cannabis in the world, the same way that it grows the best grapes in the world, it will add to the reputation, not tarnish it, says part of the Napa board, I think. Yeah. So, Honing. So, you know, it's... And they're also saying that with the wildfires and everything else, I mean, you know, your hemp plants are not going to be affected by smoke and by the heat and all this other stuff that's going on in that area. So it's becoming an ongoing issue. A lot of the alcohol wine industry is starting to put some money into cannabis growing, diversifying their product and what they're doing. Okay. South Africa. This was interesting. South Africa, as you may or may not know, South Africa has had pandemic, that new strain that came out of South Africa and all that. Well, the president of South Africa, Cyril Ramaphosa has announced a total ban on sale of alcohol for the fourth time in the pandemic. The restrictions are set to shut down starting Sunday night. Yeah, starting this coming Sunday night for a two-week period. Nobody can sell alcohol. Wineries close, bars, everything. It is totally... no wine sales because of the pandemic. And this is the fourth time he's done this. The head of the, I don't know, the alcohol board or whatever, it's something that's, you know, we don't have here, but it's the head of alcohol board says that it is unnecessary, unjustified, and counterproductive. And it says it's not going to help anything. It's just ridiculous, and it's going to hurt businesses tremendously. So, I don't know. It's the fourth time it's been done. I just haven't heard that. But they have been having some major, major outbreaks in South Africa. A rosé competition. I thought this was interesting, because they have found the winners of the latest rosé competition. Now, this was held, which I thought was odd too, in Fort Lauderdale, here in Florida, June the 25th, so just last week. The Rosé Competition 2021 has announced their winners. This is held by the Fort Lauderdale Women's Club. And it's the American Fine Wine Competition. The judges selected best in show in the dry rosé category was a 2020 rosé from Rhode Island. Rhode Island. You know, shake your head. This is the lovely rosé of Cabernet Franc, which I like, Cabernet Franc. From a surprising East Coast wine region, hit all the right notes and captivated the judges. The best of show winner in the sweet category went to Soldier Creek Winery. It was a 2020 from Iowa. Iowa. Rhode Island and Iowa won the two best rosés. The best in show in the sparkling wine category went to Pope Valley Vineyards from Napa Valley. The best in show for dry was $20. Best in show for sweet was $18. The best in show for sparkling was $42, but that was out of Napa. Yeah, okay. The Sangiovese Brut Rosé sparkling one was one that, you know, they tend to like. They like the sparkling. But two of the three came from across the country. It wasn't swept by California wineries or anything else like that, which is really, really surprises me. I expected, you know, California's been making some great rosés, and here Rhode Island Winery, Newport Vineyards, and an Iowa winery, Soldier Creek Winery, all came in with some winners there. So if you go to AmericanFineWineCompetition.org, and that's all one word, www.AmericanFineWineCompetition.org, and you can read the whole list. The charity has raised, over $150 million for charity for the competition. Wow, that's cool. So I thought that was interesting, though, that these rosés, one from Rhode Island and one from Iowa. One more thing I want to tell you about here. Well, Wine Spectator is out with their new restaurant list, so you can check that out. It'll be available in the magazine or online in a couple of weeks. The magazine should be out pretty soon. It'll be online in a couple of weeks. And France has four new disease-resistant grapes that they have came out with, which they may allow to be planted, because they've been very resistant to it in France, because it's Vitis vinifera, and these are a blend between Vitis vinifera and some American Vitis vinifera and all that. So it's an interesting approach there. But this is last. I'm going to end up with this thing here. There is a new lawsuit and a petition for writ of certiorari to the U.S. Supreme Court, which I pronounced that wrong since I'm a lawyer. A Florida retailer has asked the high court to overturn a lower court ruling concerning wine shipping. All right, that ruling from the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals claims the 21st Amendment to the Constitution allows the state of Missouri to discriminate against out-of-state wine retailers by banning them from shipping wine to Missouri residents. But at the same time, it allows Missouri retailers to ship wine to Missouri residents. And it's like, oh, no, you can't do that. National Association of Wine Retailers has all gotten behind this writ to the Supreme Court. And they say, we want this to be taken care of. Because if they can get by with it in Missouri, then they can get by with it in every state. And the Supreme Court has already basically said that you can't do that. It says, requiring a retailer to have a physical presence in the state is an inherent prerequisite to effective regulation. So Missouri's law banning out-of-state wine retailers from an online market was protected by the 21st Amendment and immune from the Commerce Clause scrutiny. And that's what they're saying. But the petition states in Granholm versus Heald, this Supreme Court declared unconstitutional two state laws that prohibited out-of-state wineries from shipping to consumers, but allowed in-state wineries to do so. The court said that the non-discrimination principle of the Commerce Clause applies to state liquor laws, so that if a state chooses to allow the direct shipment of wine, it must do so on even-handed terms. And there you go. And that's the argument. Missouri is saying, hey, I can do this because I'm quoting the 21st Amendment, and the Supreme Court's already ruled that the commerce clause comes into play, and you cannot restrict it like that. So another ruling by the Supreme Court on wine again. It's interesting. We're getting more and more of them going there. I don't know if the Supreme Court has said that they will hear this argument. No, not yet. It's a legal challenge, and they haven't said they will hear it yet. What they might do is say, no, we're not going to hear it. Throw it back to the court. You need to reexamine this. This article says, ultimate victory, however, and it will come, is when states stop listening to their best-funded special interests and take into account the consumer needs. So it's something for us to look forward to here, what's going to happen in this next ruling here in the Supreme Court. We don't know yet. We don't know if they're even going to listen to it, and if they don't, they'll pull it back. But it's followed by a group of wine retailers in Sarasota area, Florida, which is south of Tampa area, trying to ship stuff into Missouri. And they said, no, you can't do that. There are currently lawsuits pending in 7 states challenging these same basic laws. So this could be a very precedent-setting ruling on this. So there you go. That's a lot of information for today. A lot of stuff to throw out at you. Hope you learned something.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was just thinking about this spotted lanternfly that stays in the news, you know, the topic and everything. It's just ridiculous, but I don't understand why you have to get a permit for it. Controlling the population or what?
It's a little bit silly, but yeah. But you have to get, and it's a free permit. You just go down and say, I want a spotted lanternfly permit. And, you know, it's a free permit. But they can fine you.
Trying to make money
I'm sure
off
that. And I'm sure the first time they try to sue somebody, too, that's going to be appealed. And come up and say, hey, you know, just because I didn't get this permit, why can't they fine me for $300, you know, just because I didn't get a free permit? You know, and I'm sure that would be, you know, going to the courts also. But, you know, I was curious about the reason for the permitting anyway, but they said they got 26,000 businesses that are on the lookout. And that's probably from the permit list that they got that number.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
They know who's doing it.
Yeah.
Yep. So, I can see it's a tracking purpose, but find someone that just kill the thing. It's invasive. It doesn't do you any good. Kill it. It's not, you know, no benefit.
Yeah.
No benefit to it.
No benefit to anybody or anything. No, that's it. It's not like it's a protected species. You need to build a habitat for it. I mean, it's just, it's a bad bug. Yeah, it is.
Okay.
So there we go. Well, no guests next week. I will be getting, you know, check me out on Maria Leveretti's show. It's a week from last night that it should be posted. I guess. I don't know what time of day she posted, but it'll be there. But anytime after next Wednesday, it'll be up.
Good.
And then we'll try to get her on the show, too. And I'll start working on times and all that for her.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Sounds good. We will return next Thursday, which would be July the 8th, if my math is correct. And that's as far as I can handle. And
today's the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. Yeah, eighth. Yeah.
Right about
I use my fingers.
Oh, good. Yeah. Thank you all thank you all for joining us. And I hope you enjoyed it. And send comments and questions, and Ron will answer those hopefully on a future show. But let us know what you're listening to us on. And if you have any comments or questions about the show, email allaboutwine01@gmail.com. And make sure you're not spelling out those numbers. It's the number one, the number zero, and the number one. So allaboutwine101@gmail.com. And that goes to Ron, and let him know what you're listening to, what platform. I know it's not 9 platforms, but
no,
I have no idea.
Yeah,
it'd be interesting though. And let us know you're listening. It'd be nice to hear from you. We want to hear from you. So contact the show. We'll see you all next week. And thank you.
And
have a great weekend.
Have yourself a healthy and happy 4th of July. Don't blow any digits off.
This weekend.
It's Sunday, Monday's an official holiday, but it's Sunday, So be safe out there. Lock the pets away. Don't, they get scared of that big boom. They don't like that.
They don't like it. If for some reason we do have a tropical storm or something in the area and it affects our show ability for Thursday, we'll let you know because it's supposed to be like midweek next week. We'll let you know on social media, on Twitter and Facebook at All About Wine BTR. So we'll let you know there if anything's happening. But thank you again. Have a safe
weekend. So be safe on the July. Have yourself a good time. Thanks for listening.
We'll see you then. Thank you. We're out. There we go.
Concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.